All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Head on sleeves.
To the line, Hughes, Jones!
Yes, existence. Take you to listen.
First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes makes it 1-0.
Here, like, I won't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow, we should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What I'll have. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores.
Public display.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans. Welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation. My name is Chris Faber, and thank you for joining us this week. The Canucks Conversation is presented by the great folks at Zephyr Epic, and I will introduce my co-host now because he is sitting on a gold mine of Zephyr Epic cards right now. David Quadrelli. Quads, how's it going, man? Tell me what we got from Zephyr Epic here.
So we have four blaster boxes, I think, yeah, or booster, blaster, whatever, boxes of Series 1. And the MVP cards of the 2020-21 season. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We haven't opened any of those yet. So we're going to get into those. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're going to have to open one this weekend, potentially, with some other fun stuff planned that involves you taking shots on me while I'm wearing a neutral vodka goaltending jersey.
Absolutely. That should be a lot of fun. We should get around to some hockey stuff on the weekend. That'll be fun. But aside from the hockey stuff, you tweeted out a picture of it. I know you wrote about it on the Patreon as well. Can you give me a breakdown of the stuffed Gouda meatballs that I made for you and you got to try this week?
Absolutely incredible. So the first night when you brought them, there was like a little bit of spaghetti in there. So I made more spaghetti, and then I had some of my mom's sauce in a yogurt container in the fridge, because of course I did. And I threw that on top of the spaghetti with the meatballs, mixed it all up, and it was so good. And then yesterday, I put penne and then more sauce and then had the meatballs. And man, those meatballs are so good. And you've got to teach me how to make them one day, man, because holy cow, like, fantastic. Even, and they got the stamp of approval from my mom. So you got the Italian mother's stamp of approval.
That's all I was asking for. I knew that I had a feeling you would like them, but I needed your mom's approval. So now that I got a mama Italian on the show, giving me plus on my meatballs, I'm very excited for that. So I'm glad I got Mama Quad's approval on the meatballs. I thought I would, Matt. I tell you, those meatballs, like, I've made them quite a bit in the past, and I think over the past few months here, I've kind of mastered it. That's kind of been my thing through COVID, making a little bit of, you know, trying to make some of my food and kind of fine tune the ingredients to make the perfect recipe, and I feel like I found it with the meatballs right now.
I'd have to agree. After having them, I'd have to agree with you.
We got a lot of Canuck stuff to talk about as well. Definitely a lot of news going on, whether it's just rumors and rumblings, but at the same time, the prospects have been busy. And speaking of prospects, we are joined by Jonah Gadjevich this week on the show. Very excited to get to that conversation. That was one that I just had one-on-one with him, working on a deep dive right now for Canucks Army that I'll be putting out hopefully next week sometime. But it was great to talk to Jonah. He joined, like I said, 30-plus minutes on the conversation. You guys will hear that in the middle of this episode. And it's been a great week, man. We had Nils Höglander on the show on Wednesday. We're going to have Jonah Gadjevich on this episode. Just a really cool week, I think, you know, getting those two guys that are, you know, some of the top 10 prospects for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we've talked about other guys potentially coming on the show, aside from Nikita Triamkin, who we're going to talk about on this show. And I'm actually not going to be ragging on him. I've got a lot to say about Nikita Triamkin. But yeah, it's good. We're having a lot of good prospects on the show, and hopefully we can add Triamkin to the list, because again, that would be maybe the best interview we've ever conducted.
Yeah, well, let's go right there, because I'm running out of energy. I've been up early today. I got about 4 hours of sleep last night, and the reason why I didn't get a lot of sleep was I woke up to watch Triamkin this morning, 7 a.m. It's the first time I've committed to get back into Triamkin's game, and man, he looked impressive today. I mean, he's a guy who's been playing a hell of a lot of minutes down there in the KHL, and today was a great game. I mean, he looked like he was skating well, he was passing the puck well, he was very physical in the first period. Just an all-around, you know, got back a little bit on the Triamkin hype train a little bit today. I don't know about you.
Well, I mean, how can you not, right? And I mean, this is what we need to talk about, because, you know, I've gone on record so many times, and I've been saying for months now that the Canucks cannot go after Triamkin again. And I was talking about this offseason. Like, there was no way that after the season he turned in last year in the KHL, that he could come in for the Canucks at $2 million and move the needle in the right direction. In fact, I would say that he would have moved it in the wrong direction. So this is what I'm talking about. Like, when you and I were talking about him, we said, like, he needs to go to the AHL and he needs to prove that he can play well and he can be back in the NHL. Now, I don't know about you, but looking back on it, I could have revised that and said, or he needs to go back to the KHL, play top pairing minutes, play well, and he needs to be effective and show that he can at least be effective at that level to even think about getting a shot with the Canucks, who are all of a sudden a contending team once again, or they're going to be trying to be contending at least. So, I mean, I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, because, you know, you and I talked about a lot. Like, we both thought he wasn't NHL ready yet, and we wanted to see him turn in a good season in the AHL before coming to the NHL if the Canucks had signed him. Now, obviously, they didn't sign him, and now he's in the KHL. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, because that's kind of how I look at the situation now, is I'm like, okay, like, if he can turn in a good season here, like, yeah, like, let's talk about bringing him back. Like, this could be something that the Canucks explore.
Yeah, and that's, like, we talked about it a little bit, I think, going into the playoffs, and kind of a lot of offseason talk about Nikita Triamkin. And one of the things that we kept mentioning was the way that it's kind of set up right now with this season in the KHL, though we didn't really want to see him come back for the Canucks for this season, it almost sets up so perfectly for him to make a return in 2021-22 for that season, right? Because, yeah, he's going over to the KHL. He's playing top pairing minutes for a guy who was an NHL coach in Bill Peters, who's now coaching over there in the KHL. He's playing a heck of a lot of minutes. Last time I checked, he was tied for fifth in the KHL for average ice time on the ice. He's putting up points. He's playing physical. But the biggest thing is it looks like he's developing in the other parts of his game so far. Don't get me wrong, it's still very early in the season. I mean, I think he's only played 6 to 7 games, I believe. I would have to double check here. Sorry. I think he played his 9th game today. And from there, I mean, like, it's looking like the things that we talked about and the things that we didn't like about his game have improved a little bit. The skating's like he's not a bad skater. He wasn't a bad skater when he was here in Vancouver. He would just wasn't great at playing defense and being able to quickly react to plays. And it's not like he's gotten outstanding at that either. Like, he's... he's not great still at quick reaction time and having his stick be the one that makes the good move when he needs to against a forward who has a stick and is always faster than him. Like, he's still a little bit slow to react to things, but you're seeing better passes. You're seeing him ice the puck less. You're seeing him get time on the penalty kill. And this is what he's doing on the big ice, right? Like, he's doing this on a huge sheet of ice compared to what he would be like in North America on the NHL ice. And I do think that that lends its way to Triankin actually being a more productive player when he comes and plays on that smaller ice, because you look at how much space he takes up already in the KHL, he's just going to take up more space per body size that he's on the ice kind of thing. I don't know how to really explain that, but like, he's going to take up even more space when he comes over to the smaller ice with his reach that he has and just the pure size of him.
Okay, now, you know this better than I do, but I believe Triamkin's team plays on that smaller sheet of ice. I don't know if they've changed the ice dimensions, but I know for last season, like, some of the teams would play on Canadian ice dimensions, some would play on Swedish size and Finnish size. Like, I'm not sure how they divide it up, but I know, like, they play on different sizes, and one of them is NHL regulation. So I know, like, I've heard that a lot about people saying, like, oh, he's going to come to the smaller ice surface, but he's been playing on smaller ice surface quite a bit. So I don't know, like, I don't know if they've changed it this year or if... or, like, if he plays half of his games on there. Like, do you know much about that? Because I'll look it up right now while we talk if you don't know.
I don't think that his home ice is NHL size. It might have been in the past, but from just watching the games right now, it doesn't really look like it. Like, it looks big. Like, it looks like there's a lot of space, but I could have just maybe seen a bunch of away games, not really paying a ton of attention to who's the home team in these games. I'll have to look into that a little bit more. But
I've got it.
No, I mean...
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't mean to cut you off. Okay, so... okay, Podkolzin's team plays their home games, or is that CSKA? Yes, okay, yes, Podkolzin's team plays their games on NHL size rinks. Triamkin plays on Finnish size, and then there's one after that that has 7 teams, and that is the Olympic size, rink. So, the majority of his games he is playing on, like, a sheet of ice that's only 2 meters wider than Canadian ice. Okay.
Are you sure about Podkolzin? Because Podkolzin's SK, not CSKA.
Yes, I have it right. I have it right for sure.
Because I watched their game today, and it definitely looked like big ice in Podkolzin's
game.
Was
it a home game?
Yeah, it was. It was SKA's home game, so that's strange to me. But yeah, I mean, like, Triamkin right now, he's 12th in defenseman for scoring. He's got 5 points, 1 goal in 9 games, averaging 23 minutes of ice time per game, 23 and a half minutes, actually. I mean, the guy's playing a ton of minutes under Bill Peters. He's on the first pairing, so it's good to see that he is taking a step. Like, you know, like, we've all but written him off, pretty much. It felt like in the offseason that he was going to do this, but I think this is a shocking thing for a lot of people that have watched Triamkin play, and I'm not saying that I'm 100% on the train right now that he is going to make an impact player, because, like, you just don't know how that's going to translate when he comes over from Russia back to the North American League, and I still think that some time in the AHL would be something that could help him. But yeah, like, it's definitely a promising sign, and we're not just going to rip a guy just because of the fact that we have talked about in the past that he's not an NHL defenseman. You know, if he's going to take steps and actually improve, I'm all for it. Like, I think that's what we said in the past. We would love to be surprised by Nikita Triamkin. And right now, honestly, like, I am being surprised just watching him play and seeing what he's been able to do so far this year.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, right? If he can just figure out the stuff, like, something that I've seen just from the clips that you've been posting, you've watched him more than I have, is the gap control, right? And I mean, that was something that he struggled with before, and there's a lot of question marks around his positioning in both ends of the ice. And I mean, when that's the case, it's not usually a good sign that you're going to be an NHL defenseman. But if he's improving the things that he was doing poorly, I mean, I don't see a reason why he couldn't maybe become a bottom pairing defenseman, right? Like, and, you know, make no mistake, when you're a contending team, having a bottom pairing defenseman who can actually, like, be effective is huge, right? Like, we're not just putting bad defensemen on the bottom pair anymore. Like, they are going to need some good, capable defensemen on the bottom pairing. And, I mean, if Triumphing can provide them with that, that's awesome. That's a huge win for the Canucks. But before we continue here, little plot twist. So I looked up the Wikipedia page of the Ice Palace, which is where SK Ska plays their games, okay? Mm-hmm. It's saying on the Wikipedia page that the field size, whatever that means, I know that's the ice surface, is 60 by 30. But that's from Wikipedia, and then the site Nova Caps has a graphic here that says St. Petersburg plays their games on Canadian ice, which is 26 by 60. So now I'm all confused. But, okay, I looked at a picture online. So everybody listening to this, if you look up Ska, St. Petersburg rink size, the first photo that comes up is like a rink, but then it shows them changing the board side. So, oh, this is an updated version. Yeah, okay, so they change the board size. It's like they can morph it. Okay, they do play. Yes, yes, okay, cool. Interesting, very, very interesting. They do play. Yes, they do play on a 26 by 60 now. But when it was built, it was 60 by 30, but now they've shrunk it. And it's like they can change it around. So I'm not sure how they do that or when they change it around, but yeah. Interesting.
Right. It doesn't look like that on tape. Like, it looks like there's, you know, it looked like there was a lot of room on the ice, especially like Pod Colson's game went to overtime today. They went to 3-on-3 and there was a ridiculous amount of ice. So I don't know if the stuff that you're looking up is accurate, to be honest. I'm pretty sure that they're playing on a bigger ice surface just from watching it. Like, it doesn't look like an NHL size. It might just be something about the camera view, but I'm going to disagree with the wherever you're finding this information.
I'm looking at your clip, and I think you're right. It looks...
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It could be... No.
I don't know, man. I've seen a lot of their games.
I'm locking in this 26 by 60.
Okay, I disagree, but let's go back to Triamkin a little bit. In the last three games that he's played, 30 minutes of ice time, 25-31 ice time, 22-07 ice time. I mean, he's playing a ton of minutes, and the way that it works out with the Canucks and their left side of the defense corps, you know, we're going to see Olia Levy next year. We're going to see Jack Rathbone next year, but we're also going to see at the end of next year that Alex Edler's contract is up, and they're going to need some defensemen to step in and play in those roles. Obviously, nobody's going to play the number one slot on the left side. That's Quinn Hughes' spot for what I hope will be the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, you're going to need one of those guys to jump up into the top four, probably, because I don't know if Edler is going to be coming back, or if he is coming back, if he's effective enough to really be a top four guy. So, you know, one of, I think, Jack Rathbone or Olia Levy is going to have to work his way into a top four role, whether that be, I hope that that's by the start of the 2021 season, that one of them can do that. And then you kind of open up the door for the left side to be, you know, Yo Levy or Rathbone, whichever one's not playing in the top four, will hopefully be the third pairing guy. And then, you know, maybe you have Triamkin after that. And Triamkin can also play the right side. It's an option to have him there. So, yeah, like, I don't want to write him off yet, but I also don't want to sing his praises for another 10 minutes on this podcast, because it's not like he's scoring, you know, top scoring defenseman in the KHL right now. He's putting up some points. He's playing a little bit better. He's got my attention. I've decided to start waking up for his games. They're always a couple hours ahead of Pod Colson's game, so I'll be up for the 5 a.m.s and the 7 a.m.s for Triamkin. Definitely going to continue to keep an eye on him a little bit more than I probably was at the start of the season. So yeah, I'll be following up on that in the future though, for sure. But I mean, it's promising and it's a good start for him. He's got 3 points in his last three games, but he also has two minors, in his last two games as well. In each of those games, he has two minors. So, you know, he's still taking penalties and stuff. Yeah, the chirping one was kind of bad. The other one that he took today was like a goaltender interference one. And if he doesn't have size 22 feet, he probably doesn't get that penalty, but it was another tough one. So both penalties were kind of questionable, but I mean, he does get a lot of penalties, while he's playing. But you know what? A lot of shots on net too, you know, in the last two games, 7 shots on net. So you got to be happy with that for Triamkin, who's playing, you know, on the power play, on the penalty kill, first pairing minutes. Bill Peters loves this guy. So I only think he's going to kind of improve and continue to keep playing. He's back wearing an A for Avtomobilist, as I've been trying to pronounce them a little bit better.
Nailed it.
I think that was the way to do it. How's your Rogle or Regla pronunciation going?
Yerky21 on Twitter came at me because he heard how I said it, but I said it exactly how Nils Höglander said it. I have a button, but we're remote. We're recording this remotely, so I don't have the button ready right now. But literally, Nils Höglander told us that the pronunciation of it in Swedish, unless he's just messing with these two Canadian reporters that he's talking to, it is regle. That's how you say it. It's not ragle. It's regle. Like that. It's like a reg. That's how Höglander said it. And I was also told it's Höglander, but I thought it was Höglander.
I thought it was Höglander. But think, yeah, we're working with it. And we have the drop. So when we get back in the studio, we don't even have to do it. We just have the drop. We'll go straight from Thomas Durant's rate to Regle. But we also got the stamp of approval from Höglander on the show on Wednesday that we were saying it fine for the English way, right? Like he said, we were saying it like completely fine.
I told you, though, he's trying to be nice. That's like how Pedersen told everybody his name was Elias Pettersson when he got here. Like, he was just being nice. He doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. It's the hockey. It's code, man. It's the code.
I feel like that might be the Swedish code. It's just like, you know, be as nice as possible. And Höglander, by the way, I've shown you some of the texts that we had. I have never received a text message from Nils Höglander that does not have an emoji in it. He just loves like his emojis. So. Yeah, Sammy Salo as well. A lot of these guys love their emojis. But, all right, I think we spent enough time on Triamkin. Like, man, it's funny because, like, we start recording and we start talking about Triamkin, and I swear, no 15 minutes goes by faster than what we do when we talk about Nikita Triamkin. We have a lot to get to on the other side, but I think it's a good time to throw to our interview now after a couple of quick words from our two sponsors, Labatt and Zephyr Epic. So let's get to those ads, we'll get to the Jonah Gadjevich conversation, and then we'll meet you guys on the other side to talk a little bit about the Gadjevich conversation and then dive into some of the recent stuff going on with the Canucks rumors and rumblings, and as well as dive into what's going on with Vasily Podkolzin and Nils Höglander and their situations with their seasons beginning. So we'll see you on the other side of these breaks, and hopefully you guys enjoy this conversation with Jonah Gadjevich.
Zephyr Epic is Canada's source for sports cards and trading card games. They ship free anywhere in Canada on orders over $50. And now, join them for Thursday night breaks at 5 p.m. Pacific time every Thursday and be a part of an epic case break experience. Purchase your spot on ZephyrEpic.com and watch the live stream on twitch.tv/ZephyrEpic. And for all you Canucks Conversation podcast listeners, you can save $5 off your purchase with the code CanucksConvo. Some restrictions apply. Follow them on social media to be part of monthly contests and ticket giveaways. Search Zephyr Epic on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
All right, y'all, before we go any further, I want to give a quick shout-out to one of the two new sponsors of the Canucks Conversation. I'm talking about Mike's Hard Lemonade. You know about Mike's Hard Lemonade, but do you know about their new flavor, the Blue Freeze? It is absolutely delicious. One of my go-to alcoholic beverages right now. Was at a wedding a couple weeks ago, and it was absolutely delicious. My drink of choice for the whole day. It tastes pretty much just like a melted Freezy. That's the best way I can describe it. But if you haven't gone out and tried it, I highly recommend the Mike's Hard Blue Freeze. Get out to your local liquor store if you are the legal drinking age and make sure to give it a shot. You can follow them on social media at Mike's Hard Canada and check them out on Instagram and Twitter for both of those. All right, guys, joining us now, 2017 second round pick, 55th overall by the Vancouver Canucks, has played the last two seasons in Utica. Riding the bus, I guess is what we call it down there. Jonah Gadjevich is joining us now. Jonah, how you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I kind of want to get started actually even before Utica a little bit and dive into how you kind of got into hockey and potentially if you played any other sports growing up, because I find it kind of funny. I mean, some hockey players that I talk to, they're either athletes and they play a bunch of different sports, or some of them just kind of found out that they were athletes when they got on the ice. So I'm curious which one you were of that too.
Yeah, I mean, I probably started playing when I was about 3 or 4. You know, I played house league all the way up until like Pee Wee or something like that, because you know, rep was just like, it was such a big commitment when you're a young kid. And you know, with the different sports, you know, I was playing soccer, I played, you know, I tried lacrosse, I tried football. You know, my parents kind of wanted me to, you know, be a kid and enjoy different sports and try new things. So I wasn't like, you know, specifically focused on hockey. And then when I got older to, you know, I think it was Pee Wee was my first year of rep hockey, I just kind of, you know, sat down with my parents and just said to them that, you know, it's something that, you know, I love playing hockey. So I wanted to play more of it and then got into rep.
Awesome. Well, that's great. And you mentioned you grew up in Whitby, Ontario. That's an interesting spot. We kind of joked about it before getting going here. Home of David Ayers, for people who don't remember the name, the Zamboni driver who ended up coming in and playing for the Carolina Hurricanes and getting a win over the Leafs. What were your initial thoughts? Because you mentioned that you didn't know who this was until it started saying that he was from Whitby, Ontario. Did that surprise you a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd never really heard of him, but to see, you know, obviously it was big news when he went in and, you know, he got the win and stuff. So afterwards, hearing that he was from Whitby, it was nice to see someone represent the town well like that.
Absolutely. And you guys have had some pretty good representation. James Neal, obviously, from Whitby. Paul Ranger. I'm wondering, like, what's the hockey scene kind of like in Whitby, Ontario?
It's pretty good, actually. I know there's a lot of good, you know, hockey schools and you know, gyms and the Whitby Minor Hockey Association is a really good program. You know, obviously I grew up playing through it, and you know, some names like you just mentioned have come through, and it's a really nice hockey town.
Absolutely. And Canucks actually just recently went that way and drafted Ethan Kepin in the 2019 draft. Did you remember hearing about a young Ethan Kepin potentially when you were in Whitby?
Yeah, I did, actually. I remember, well, when I was in Owen Sound, and he was, I think, going to be drafted into the OHL, I remember hearing his name. Like, you just kind of, you know, if you hear someone's from Whitby, you do a little research on them and then see who they are. And then, you know, he was my roommate at camp this past year, so I got to know him pretty well, and he's an awesome guy.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. And I kind of want to dive into camp a little bit, because I find it so interesting hearing what the prospects camp was like, because I think over the past couple of years, 2018 being the first one that I kind of heard this, was a guy like Quinn Hughes just sticks out so much, and he looks like an absolute elite player at these camps. And then recently, with some of the guys that I talked to who were at this year's prospect camp, said the kind of the same thing about Nils Höglander, saying that he was on the next level compared to some guys. What do you remember from this past prospects camp?
Well, so actually, I didn't. I wasn't at the prospect camp in the midsummer one, so I didn't get a chance to see him, Höglander. But when I was at, you know, the rookie camp and main camp, which is in you know, the September one,
yep.
I got to see a lot of these young guys, and you know, a lot of really skilled, a lot of really good players coming up. So it's exciting to see.
Yeah, and I'm actually from Vancouver Island as well. I remember being in attendance at the one in Victoria. What did you think of Victoria? Was that your first time over to Vancouver Island?
It was, yeah. No, it was great over there. Really cool. They had a good setup for camp there. And, you know, obviously it was really competitive and a lot of tough days there. But I loved it. It was great.
Absolutely. I wanted to get into your OHL career just a little bit before we start to really dive into this Comet stuff. And I wanted to ask you, like, going into that, you had your first 2 years where you played over 60 games in both those games, or in both those seasons, you know, didn't put up a ton of great numbers, but then you come into that 2016-17 season, and it seemed to just explode. I know you had an awesome line there featuring another Canucks prospect, Petrus Palmu. What was that team like for you? Was that just a special year for you in 2016-17?
Oh, yeah, that was a very memorable year. You know, leading up to my first 2 years in the league were big learning years and then development years. You know, I think I had, like, a bit of a different role. I mean, in junior hockey, when you're a young guy, you kind of start at the bottom. I mean, it's like anywhere, you know, the same thing with pro hockey. You kind of start at the bottom and work your way up. And, you know, I just stuck with it. I really, really trained hard. I was really hard on my diet. I really, you know, put in a lot of extra work. And I think by the time I got to my third year, which was my draft year, everything just started to click. And you know, I got to play with PD, and I got to play with, you know, Suzuki and guys like Hancock, and we had such an amazing group that year. And you know, like I said, we'd played together, all of us, for a couple of years at that point, so I think we just started to gel, and we all had that connection together, and just had a lot of success.
Yeah, and you got 46 goals in those 60 games. Obviously a lot of goals came from different parts on the ice, but I'm curious, do you think that there was more than 30 of those from within maybe 5 feet of the crease, because that seems to be where you dominate?
Yeah, probably 40 of them.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun watching some of those highlights. I mean, some of the plays that you guys are putting together at the OHL level with that line was just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it was fun to be a part of it. It was fun to play with guys like Nick Suzuki and Petrus Palmu. So, you know, like I said, we enjoyed our time there. It was a fun year and a special group.
And I remember, you know, when I started covering hockey and kind of really getting into prospects, kind of was that 2017 draft. And I remember when they drafted you in the second round, the first thing I do is I go to Elite Prospects. I try and see the numbers that you put up. And I'm not sure, maybe that giggle knows what I'm talking about here, but that photo of you on Elite Prospects from the February 16th game, you took a cross-check from Max Jones as you scored your hat-trick goal as well. Do you have any fond memories of that game? Because the picture, I mean, it tells a thousand stories pretty much.
Oh yeah, I remember that very clearly. it was a fun night, great game to be a part of, that's for sure.
Absolutely. What do you think about that scene when, you know, if you ever look yourself up or maybe your friends or family look you up on Elite Prospects and that's the photo that they decided to use?
Yeah, it's a little aggressive. I mean, they probably could have chose a different one, but I think people get a good laugh at it.
I think they do. I think people are thinking, you know, if they haven't ever looked it up, please do. If you guys are listening to this right now, head over to Elite Prospects. You'll definitely get a laugh out of it. And then your final year of the OHL, you actually get selected to the World Juniors. What was that experience like for you? Because I think so many Canadians tune into this incredible tournament that they have at the best time of the year, and you got to actually be a part of it. Was that kind of a dream for you growing up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember staying up super late to, you know, when the tournament was overseas to watch games. And you know, obviously when I just every year me, my family, my friends, we're always talking about the World Juniors, we're always watching the games. And you know, I went to the showcase camp, I think, or whatever it's called, the World Junior Summer Camp, the previous summer, and that was great. You know, it was nice to kind of be, you know, potentially on their radar, and you know, I thought I showed well there, and then, you know, being selected for the Super Series games, thought I had a good showing there. And when I got invited to that final camp, I mean, I kind of said to myself, I was like, wow, like, you know, you're getting this opportunity. I wasn't sure. You know, I knew I wasn't a lock. I really knew that I had to work for that, for that spot on the team. And, you know, I knew my role. I knew what they needed. And I just did it to the best of my ability and then ended up getting the call. And it was just incredible. I mean, the whole experience was surreal. You know, really cool being able to represent your country. And, you know, I had never played under 17 or under 18, you know, the tournaments leading up to World Juniors, basically. And it was kind of my first gig with Hockey Canada, and definitely one to remember.
Yeah, and I think that's when you really came on the Canucks fans' radar, because they saw, you mentioned it, you knew that there was a role that needed to be played, and that's kind of what you brought to that team. I mean, you came in as a guy who played in the bottom six, played feisty as hell. When I asked you if you played sports, I was really expecting to hear rugby, just from seeing the way that you play on the ice at times.
Yeah, I always wanted to play rugby growing up, but my mom wouldn't let me. My dad was a professional rugby referee, so my brother played, and he was always trying to get me to play, and I wanted to, but my mom was like, no, you're too soft. Anyways.
Well, your dad must be proud, because he seemed to bring a little bit of that rugby mentality in hockey, I feel like.
Yeah.
Well, let's get right into this Utica Comets here, because you came into your rookie season. I don't mean to speak for you, but I see the numbers that you put up this past year, and I'm wondering, was that first year just too much of a tough transition? I mean, I've heard it a similar thing, actually, when I talked to Cole earlier in the year, that jump from junior to professional hockey, it's potentially the biggest jump that a guy who's recently drafted kind of has to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it was the biggest jump. You know, I don't know if I anticipated it being such a difficult league to play in. I knew it was obviously good hockey. I've seen AHL games before, but you don't really know until you get out there. And, you know, we had a lot of guys in Utica there, and I was, you know, trying to fight my way into the lineup and then stay in there. And it's just, you know, it's a tough league. And I think it kind of, you know, took me by surprise. And I think I had to work extra hard. And then I put in a lot of extra work when I was in Utica. I was doing a lot of, you know, extra workouts and extra skates. And, you know, after practice, I'd be doing extra skates with the coaches, and just, I tried to put in a lot of extra work. And then coming into the summer out of that year, I knew the way that I had to train. I knew the way that I had to approach my on ice skates. I knew that I had to bring more intensity, and I had to, you know, really focus on what I was doing, because, you know, if you want to get better and you want to succeed in pro hockey, you can't just go through the motions. Mm-hmm. So I really took a step in my training and stuff, and my off ice and on ice stuff. So I really, you know, felt a lot more comfortable heading into this, you know, my second year, and I thought I made some strides for sure.
I'm wondering, because I've heard a lot of people, and they've mentioned that, you know, after you get a year of pro hockey, like you kind of just said it, like the off-season training, you know that you have to do something different, you know, or something to the next level. Now that you're a pro, I'm wondering, was there anything that you picked up between your first and second year that you kind of did differently in the off-season?
You know what, I feel like I've always been a guy that worked really hard in the gym. You know, like I said before, I diet, like, you know, I have my naturopath that, you know, have a very specific diet, mm-hmm. Extra supplements. Like I'm really in tune, I think, with my body and the way that I need to train and stuff. But I think just after being in the AHL, I think I realized, you know, that intensity that I need to bring every night.
Right.
I think that, you know, the role that I was going to have success with playing in Utica, I needed to bring that extra fire, and I needed to have, you know, better conditioning. I needed to be stronger on pucks. I, you know, because in Owen Sound, I think I won a majority of my puck battles. And then my first year in Utica, I wasn't winning a majority of the puck battles. I was losing a majority of them. So I knew that there were specific things that I had to work on and specific areas that I needed to improve in order to have success in my role. So I think coming into Utica this year, I had a better understanding of how I was going to have success here. And I worked on those, you know, weaknesses that I had. And I think I did a better job of getting to the net. I think I did a better job of winning puck battles and, you know, my play along the wall. I think I got more pucks out this year, and I think I was better on the forecheck. So there was just little things in my game that I just felt like I just wasn't quite there mm-hmm. in my first year in Utica. And obviously it comes with experience. So the more games I play, the more, you know, comfortable I feel out there and stuff like that. So it's just, you know, it's kind of a learning process, and I'm going to, you know, heading into this year, I'm still going to continue to work on weaknesses, and I'm going to pick apart my game. I think that I'm a player that's, you know, really hard on himself. I think that, you know, I'm also honest with myself, though. I you know, if I have a bad game, I'm not going to pat myself on the back and say, hey, you know what, you did a good job. You know, I think I know how, you know, when I play well and when I don't. And I'm honest with myself, and I talk with the coaches. I talk with, you know, older guys on the team, and then I really try to improve my game. So, you know, I'm excited for whenever the season's going to start, but I'm excited for it to come up because I'm, you know, kind of tired of training in the gym. I want to get out there, and I want to get back into games because I feel like I'm ready.
Yeah, well, that's awesome to hear. And you mentioned it, you know, I've heard this from a lot of people, a guy that that I don't think really got, like, talked about enough maybe in the media or potentially even from the Utica Comets, because I heard that he was a lot louder in the locker room. He's over in the KHL now, but what did you learn from a guy like Reid Boucher who's been around the block?
Well, Bouch was great to be around. You know, just seeing his habits and practice, they translate right to the game. You know, if he doesn't score in practice, like, you can tell, like, he's pissed. Like, he'll, you know, smash a stick off the board or whatever. Like, you know, he's a competitor. He wants to score in practice, and he wants to score in games. Like, you know, and that's kind of a mentality that I've, you know, tried to, you know, bring into my game, is that, you know, I want to score in practice. Like, I'm setting practice goals now because that's how it has to be. Like, if I want to score in a game, you know, I got to do it in practice first. So it's just little things like that Bouch does so well. And, you know, he works so hard, and, you know, he's always involved in the play, and it's fun to watch and fun to learn from. So it was great to have him as a teammate for my first 2 years there.
Most definitely. And it just seemed like a leader on the ice and off the ice from what we heard. And just hearing stuff from behind the scenes, you know, I hear that he's a little bit funnier than people would expect.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy.
That's awesome. And another, like, you can learn from these veterans, but I wonder if you've learned anything from being in such a similar situation to a guy like Cole Lind, who came in and, you know, both of you guys are second round picks in the same year. You guys come in and both kind of, you know, I think it's safe to say you guys maybe struggle a little bit with that transition at the start, but both of you guys had bounce back seasons in your second year. So how cool is it to kind of go through the process with a guy who was also a CHL player, also made that jump, and is in such a similar situation to you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it was obviously good having Lindy there, you know, being a CHL guy like myself, being a late birth, you know, I think we're born like a couple days apart. Like, you know, we're very, very similar in that sense. So, you know, having a young guy on the team as well with me, you know, obviously he went through, you know, his ups and downs his first year, and then he had a really strong season this year, and it was great to see. So, yeah, no, it's nice having a guy like that around, and, you know, we can just try to take strides from each other and then both try to improve, and, you know, we push each other. So it's, yeah, it's great to have a guy like that.
And I find it just hilarious because there's so many similarities between you two. And this past season, there was two players from on the Utica Comets from Shaunavon, Dyson Stevenson and Cole, obviously. And next year, there's potentially going to be two guys from Whitby, Ontario, which is just crazy to think of the similarities that you guys are going through.
Yeah, seriously.
As we're kind of talking about this Utica Comets team, like, you know, I watched probably 95% of the games last year for you guys. There was... You know, there were times where that Utica Comets team looked like the best offensive powerhouse in the AHL, it felt like. Was that kind of your guys' vibe going into the season? Because you had a lot of great skilled players, it felt like.
Yeah, for sure. We had a lot of strong offensive players. And, yeah, I mean, obviously everyone wants to score goals. So there was definitely some games there where it, you know, some of the guys made it look pretty easy. And then, you know, there was some where it wasn't so easy. But, yeah, I mean, for the most part, like, we had such a talented group last year. And it was really sad to see the season be cut short like that, because I was really excited to be heading into playoffs. Right. And, you know, would have been obviously my first experience in pro playoffs. So, I was really excited for that. And then obviously, like I said, the group that we had was so incredible. And I think we would have done some big things.
I think so too. I would have been really excited to see that team go on a run and get hot. I remember how the season started, and I just remember watching that team, and I thought like, okay, this is way too good to be an AHL team. It felt like at times, you know, seeing what you guys did at the start of the year there.
Yeah, I know. I think we won like 10 in a row. And at that point, we were just like, oh my gosh, are we going to go undefeated this whole year?
Yeah, that would have been unreal. But like, I'm wondering, like, where is something that you like to improve on your game when you're working in front of the net? Because we talked about it in the AHL or in the OHL, maybe 40 of those goals came from you right and tight. And I see that's where you do it a lot at the AHL level as well. Whether you're on the power play or at 5-on-5, it just seems like, you know, is there some way that you kind of look at trying to dominate the net front presence?
Yeah. You know, like I said before, I think, you know, my first year I was getting out-muscled a little bit and just kind of not outworked, but out-battled. And this year I thought I did a better job of that. And I think I need to do even better next year. I think that, you know, getting into that position that I need to be in and being able to hold, you know, big defensemen off is something that I need to do to have success. And, you know, I work on my deflections a lot. I work on tracking rebounds and, you know, getting them up right under the bar so that the, you know, the goalie can't get them. And that's something that, you know, I think I probably missed a couple, like, I'd probably say close to 10, you know, deflections this year. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they should have been goals, but I didn't get all of it, or I didn't, you know, have my stick in on the right angle or whatever it may be. So that's something that I'm working on a lot this year as well, so that I, you know, come next season when I get into that position and I'm fighting in front of the net, I can, you know, make sure that if I'm, you know, I recognize the angle that I'm on and that, you know, I'll have a better deflection that it will go in. Because, you know, if I can increase my goal total, you know, by 10, you know, that I think that would probably help us win, you know, a few more games. So that's something that I'm working on is getting those deflections in better positions, and obviously my strength and balance, so that, you know, I can still, you know, maybe do a better job of out muscling defenders.
And it's not all from goals in tight. I do remember you coming in down the wing one time and absolutely drilling a shot bar down. Do you remember that goal at all? The absolute snipe that you had?
Yeah,
I think it was
I
against
do.
Bridgestone, or sorry, I forget their name.
Bridgeport. Yeah, I remember that one. I have been working a lot on my shooting as well. Mm-hmm. Shooting in stride, shooting off different, you know, each leg, and changing the angle on my shots as well. So hopefully I'll have a few more of those goals as well.
Most definitely. And when you talked about the World Juniors team and getting on such a skilled team, you mentioned that you kind of knew your role going into that. I'm wondering if you, like, project yourself into the NHL and where you want to play, like, is there a role that you think that you can fill at the NHL level that your skill set is different than potentially what they have on the roster right now?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at, you know, guys like Roussel and Beagle and like kind of those bottom six guys that play, you know, a big part in team success. I think that I can be a physical player in the NHL. I think that I can also score goals in the NHL, though. You know, obviously, I feel like I have a lot of work to do. I think I need to work on my speed. I got to work on my strength. I got to work on my conditioning. There's a lot of things that I need to get better, but I do see myself playing in the NHL in one of those, you know, power forward, shut down roles that can also score. So I think that's kind of what I'm aiming for.
Absolutely. Well, that's good to hear. I feel like that's that is a spot that's kind of calling your name from the way that you play the game. And I want to ask a little bit about somewhat of being like a power forward type guy. You know, you're not afraid to drop the gloves at all. I've been in a couple fights in my life, but none on the ice. So I'm wondering, like, what's going through your mind when the gloves are about to get shed? Is it just kind of like you see red and just start chucking, or is there something that goes through your mind at all when you're in a fight?
It's kind of hard to say. I mean, like, I guess, you know, I've been in a couple fights, and I you know, I'm not afraid to drop the gloves. I mean, if someone wants to fight me and there's good reason for it, then, you know, I'll definitely do it. I'm not someone that, you know, goes looking or running around, goes looking for fights. I'm not really that type of player. And, but yeah, I mean, like, sometimes I guess it happens so fast that, you know, you don't really have time to think about it. Yeah. And, you know, that's all right with me. I just want to get a good grab and throw some punches. But yeah, it's definitely not something that I shy away from.
That's good to hear. And it's something that, I don't know how to say this, but I feel like the Canucks have gone through something in the past few years where, whether is a dirty hit, people have been looking for someone to step up and do something about it. Zach McEwen, actually, who you played with for a couple of years there, I mean, he's been excellent at it coming into the lineup. If there's a dirty hit on one of their stars, you know, he is immediately shedding the gloves and go to it. How does that kind of play out in your brain? Like, for you, if they go at somebody or anybody, really, it doesn't even have to be a star. Like, what triggers in your brain? Is it just immediately you got to go back your guy up?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it goes through my head. I feel like I've always been like that. I mean, you know, my second OHL game, I was, you know, 15 years old still because of my late birthday. And Petrus actually got hit from behind by, I think he was like a 20-year-old. And I just turned around and dropped my gloves and we went at it. And that was my first ever fight. I didn't think twice. I just, you know, I saw it, you know, something I didn't like, and I wanted to protect my teammates. And I guess I've just kind of always been like that. But yeah, I know. I mean, Q does a great job at that. I think we were playing in Florida's AHL team. Anyways, we were playing there. Yeah, Springfield, I think. Yeah. I got hit by one of their big defensemen, and, you know, like, I got smoked, not just hit, I got smoked. And I, you know, I'm still on the ice, and I look up, and then Q came flying in and then fought the guy. So I know he's got my back as well. And, you know, there's guys like Arsenault and Stevenson, like, there's a lot of guys, and Banksy, like, I feel like everyone on Utica has each other's back. And I think that's why it made us such a tight group. But yeah, I mean, you know, for me, if I see something like that, then, you know, I have no problem stepping in for my teammates.
Absolutely. Well, that's good to hear. And yeah, you mentioned it. I won't be including that hit in the article, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, we'll have to delete that footage.
Yeah, we'll keep that one out for sure. And Jonah, I guess one of the things that you've kind of battled with over the past couple of years is going through a few injuries. Now that you have like a little bit of an extra extended time, do you think this is going to help you going into next season to kind of be fully healthy when the regular season starts?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm pretty in tune with my body. I think that, you know, I've done a good job at, you know, setting myself up for avoiding injuries. I think I do a lot of work on my body in the off season, and then try to prep myself for in season. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's you can't control what happens in season. You take an awkward hit, you fall awkwardly, and you just tweak something and have to take some time off. It's not something that you can prepare for. But I do think that having this extended off season will allow my body to get stronger and I guess more durable, so that I can avoid that in the future.
And we talk about next season. It's kind of, you know, it's been crappy, I guess, some of the news that I've kind of heard over the last little bit. There's not really a set date for the AHL season. What's it kind of like for you guys right now? You're just kind of in limbo and just kind of training as much as possible and just waiting for some good news, I guess?
Yeah, basically, I mean, you know, when they called off the season, I came home and I was, you know, just working out still. I just in my basement. I mean, everything was closed, but I was trying to stay in shape just in case we got the call back. And then when the season was completely canceled, I think I took about 2 weeks off. And then I think beginning of May, first week of May is when I started training again, like, you know, my summer program. Mm-hmm. And I've been training ever since. So it's been a long off season so far, but you know, I feel good. I feel strong. And now it's just kind of, you know, I'm starting to ramp up and just so that I'm prepared for whenever we get the call.
I'm just like, I'm thinking about this extended off season. I'm just picturing like every guy in the AHL being like 20 pounds heavier with muscle next season.
Yeah, everyone's going to be shredded.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it worked out excellent for a guy like Olia Levy, who came into Canucks camp, I guess the second training camp, if you want to call it that way, with, you know, a healthy body, a guy who's battled injuries a lot in his career. And I think he impressed a lot of Canucks fans. He impressed a lot of Canucks media just because, you know, he was given that extra time to come back and be fully healthy. So I'm hoping that it's a similar way, and hopefully the AHL gets going up soon. But a couple guys, you know, I've heard it kind of floated around that the guys were looking overseas. Did that ever cross your mind at all this year?
Yeah, actually, it kind of has. I mean, you know, I think that would be good for me just to get some more pro games in, you know, because obviously we still don't know when, you know, training camps are going to happen or when the season's going to start. So because everything's so up in the air, I mean, it could be a possibility if something makes sense and then Vancouver kind of okays it. And, you know, obviously there's still a lot of stuff in the air, but hey, like, I'd love to get into games right now. I've been in a gym for like over 5 months now, and it's, you know, you're just kind of itching to get back on the ice and into games. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But obviously my main focus is just to be prepared for whenever Vancouver holds their camp so I can go in and impress and push for a spot.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the cool thing going into it. Like, I wonder, and I've talked to some guys about this that have mentioned that they have a somewhat of a goal kind of going into the season. Is there something that, you know, let's just say the AHL were to restart in December when the NHL starts, you know, is there a goal for you going into next year that you would kind of like to hit? Is there one thing that you would like to see happen?
I, you know what, heading into this past season, I had, you know, multiple goals. I think that, you know, I'll probably have the same thing heading into this season, and I'll probably, you know, talk with my, you know, sports psychologist and my agent and, you know, really give things, you know, a thought about how I want to be in the upcoming season. Obviously I want to have success, and, you know, maybe it's even a conversation with, you know, the coaching staff in Utica or your management in Vancouver of, you know, what is something that's attainable for me to achieve this year. And obviously I want to set the bar high because I have, you know, high expectations for myself, and I want to have success, and I want to impress everyone, and I want to improve my game. So those are things that are just going to come, I guess, more closer to the season. But yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, every year I try to focus on specific things.
Absolutely. And I think it's cool for a guy like you who's, you know, in a stage where he gets to develop so much and learn so much about the professional game. You know, you're going to turn 22 next month. And looking up at what's going on in the NHL team with Vancouver, like, how much does it excite you? Did you follow their playoff run at all?
Yeah, I did. I was, you know, trying to watch as many games as possible, and I was, you know, following highlights and following them as best I could. So it was exciting to watch them for sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. And hopefully we can get you up there very soon. I think Canucks fans will be very excited to see you bring your game to the NHL level.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to be there. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, John, I'll let you go over there. I think it's been a great conversation. Hopefully people enjoyed this, and I'm going to enjoy writing this article about you, man.
That's great. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, and thank you very much to Jonah Gadjevich for joining us there for that great conversation. Quaz, I don't think you've heard it yet, but I mean, that conversation I had with Jonah Gadjevich, one of my favorite ones that I've had. I thought the way that he articulated, the way that he looks at the game of hockey was so cool. I really enjoyed that conversation, man. We could have gone on for another hour and a half, and we did, actually. Like, honest, not like an hour and a half, but after that, I think we went on for like 20 minutes off air. Before and after the show, like the actual interview. So that was really cool. Jonah Gadjevich, pulling for the guy because he was a really nice guy to chat with. And I thought he really understood what he kind of needs to do to become an NHL player. He's not a guy who wants to crack and play on a first line. He knows his role. It's what he talked about a little bit with being a guy on the World Junior team as well. Like,
he said that he knew what his role was going to be on that World Junior team when he made it. And I think that he's taking that same kind of mindset to make the Canucks. Like, he knows that he's going to be a third or fourth line guy in the wing who needs to bang bodies, kill penalties, and do all that type of thing. So I'm excited that that he kind of has that mindset going into what he wants to become as an NHL player.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's really good to see that he knows what he has to do. And like you said, and like he said, he hasn't been hasn't taken a day off in like 5 months from the gym, right? So I mean, when you're doing that, good things usually come. So hopefully he's somebody who can make it, because not only would it be good for him, it'd be huge for the Canucks to have another prospect hit and actually play at the NHL level.
Yeah, we joked about that in the interview. He said that he's heard that a lot of other guys in the AHL have just been like in the gym waiting to know what the hell is going on with the AHL. And I asked him, I was like, is everyone going to come in at like 240 straight muscle next year? So that was pretty funny. He said, yeah, it's just going to be like a yoked up AHL. Everyone's just going to be massive next year because they've just been sitting in the gym since the AHL season was canceled. So I thought that was pretty funny as well. But let's move on to some stuff that I know that you wanted to talk about a little bit. It's something that you're working on right now with Jacob Markstrom. And how much you believe he was the MVP of the Vancouver Canucks, I believe you were going to say.
No. I am talking about how Jacob Markstrom was the top three goalie in the league, at the very least. Like, maybe top two, okay? The only goalie who was better than him was Connor Hellebuck, in my opinion. You know, when I look at the Vezina voting, I see that Andrei Vasilevsky and his 917 save percentage finished third in voting, and Markstrom finishes fifth. I mean, I know it's the GMs, and I was talking to Kevin Woodley a bit about the Vezina voting and how it works, and he said the most important thing to these GMs is wins. And I mean, Vasilevsky definitely deserved the Vezina win last year when he got it. In the 2018-19 season, he had a .925 save percentage and a 39-10 record with four overtime losses. So the thing about that season, though, is he was facing a lot of shots, right? Like, the Tampa defense wasn't what it was this season in the 2018-19 season. It wasn't as good. It was a very porous defense core that he was playing behind, and he was backstopping. So when I was talking to Woodley about it, I was like, Woodley pointed out that, like, a lot of the advanced stats that show Markstrom was a top two goalie in the league don't even have Vasilevsky in, like, the top 15 or top 20. And I mean, that's alarming. But he wasn't too bad this year. But when he was asked about it, basically he mentioned, like, I wasn't facing as many shots, and it was something he wasn't really used to. And that got me thinking, like, okay, so not only was Jacob Markstrom outstanding this year, right, for the same reasons that Vasilevsky was outstanding in 2018-19, playing behind a bottom five defense in the league, backstopping them to the postseason berth, all this great stuff. Like, Markstrom was so vital to the Canucks. I've said it before and I've said it again. Like, Markstrom is the best goalie in the Pacific Division by far, Western Conference, whatever you want to call it. Like, you know, well, I guess Hellebuck, but whatever. The point is that I'm thinking when Markstrom signs as a UFA, right? Like, bear with me here. If a team were to take a flyer on Markstrom, and I know there's a lot of interest in Markstrom out there, does a team see that, maybe this goaltender was in an environment with a goaltending coach who really understood him and was really able to morph his game? See Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida, right? Is this a guy we really want to be paying long term for? Because if it's a team like Calgary that has a pretty good defense, right? What if Markstrom's not used to facing less than 30 or less than 40 shots a night, and all of a sudden he struggles? Because that's what happened with Vasilevsky, right? Like, his defense improved, but he became worse. And I mean, he's playing great in the playoffs right now, don't get me wrong, but regular season alone, you know, like, Vasilevsky did struggle this year compared to what he did last year and the year before that. And what those 2 years have in common is their defense wasn't as good as it is now. So I don't know. It got me thinking a bit, and it's just something I'm working on, and I thought I'd throw it out there for the listeners on the podcast, because who knows? Like, maybe Markstrom struggles with a change of scenery.
Yeah, potentially. I think that a lot of teams are going to look at Jacob Markstrom and what he did and think, oh man, what would that guy do with our defense in front of him instead of what the Vancouver Canucks was, who was, you know, a bottom five team for giving up scoring chances, giving up shots. They were, you know, they were a bad team when it came down to that. So I think that a lot of teams are thinking, maybe he only gets better. So, I mean, looking at the, I guess, the system that they had in front of him, yeah, it sounds like that's a cool, you know, theory that maybe that the way that Ian Clark work with Jacob Markstrom actually work. But I think that, you know, Jacob Markstrom gets in front of a better defense, I think he plays a little bit better. But then it's tough too, because you look at some of Jacob Markstrom's games, and some of his best games are when he faced over 35 shots. There was a ridiculous stat, I can't remember the exact number, but like Jacob Markstrom's record when he faced 30 or I think it was 32 or more shots was absolutely,
but yeah.
Yeah, I think it went down to 32 actually, and it was even still really good. But like when he faced a decent amount of shots, he had a ridiculous record, and the Canucks won a lot of those games where he only let in one or two goals. So yeah, that's an interesting thing to look at. I think that Jacob Markstrom's going to get paid big time. From what we've heard, you know, there's a lot of teams that have Jacob Markstrom as the number one guy circled on the top of their free agency board. And I, you know, when if the Canucks can't get this deal done by October 9th, it's not going to last long for him on the free agent market without a contract. Like, he's going to get a contract pretty fast. There's a lot of teams that are obviously very interested in his services. And yeah, like, it's crazy to think that the Canucks might be forced into moving into Thatcher Demko instead of kind of making that decision on their own. But that's got to be something internally for them to decide. And if Jacob Markstrom wants 5 years and a no-move clause and wants something like $5.5 to $6.5 million, unfortunately, like, the Canucks have to walk away from that. That's too much money. That's too much control in Jacob Markstrom's camp. And it's crazy to say that you need to walk away from your two-time MVP. But if that's going to be the reason why, like, it's not really a bad decision, I think, in my books. If Jacob Markstrom's coming in at $6 million over 5 years with that no-move clause, you can't really do anything at the expansion draft. Like, you're going to have to get rid of Demko no matter what Demko does next season. That's a scary thought. So it might be time to walk away from Markstrom. And I think that if we start to see him get closer to October 9th, there's more of a chance that he is going to be leaving to go somewhere else, whether it's, you know, Edmonton or Calgary or Carolina, even Colorado's in the mix from what I've heard. So, I mean, like, there's some pretty good teams. Like, man, I think of Jacob Markstrom landing in Colorado, and like, Colorado has all this cap space and this incredible core already that's locked up at a pretty low rate for a lot of their top players, and these guys coming in like Bowen Byram and Alex Newhook. You know, you add Jacob Markstrom to that group, and man, like I am worried about what the Colorado Avalanche are going to do to the league over the next couple of years if that happens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, something interesting to note, Drancer was talking to a pro scout of an NHL team, and that pro scout told Drancer that he thinks a lot of teams, the team you work for included, has Jacob Markstrom as the number two UFA that could make the most difference for the team that signs him, right? And I mean, that list would usually, what you would think, is probably Alex Pietrangelo number one, and then Taylor Hall right behind him. So the fact that a pro scout of an NHL team thinks that Jacob Markstrom can have more of an impact than Taylor Hall can, like, imagine putting that on your 2020 apocalypse bingo card at the start of the season. Like, yeah. Taylor Hall was supposed to be the big UFA this year, and now Markstrom's ahead of him in the eyes of a few NHL teams. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just something interesting to note, because I know the Canucks probably don't rate him that highly, and the point that they wouldn't pay as much as a UFA signing team would. I mean, if he signs with the Canucks, it'll be for less than whatever he was being offered on the open market, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a similar situation with Chris Tanev. Like, if we've heard some rumors and stuff, but,
yep.
You know, that's the thing. We're not going to dive into a ton of rumors. I think what our plan kind of is when news breaks, we're looking at doing some emergency episodes. That's why we're not going to really go super in-depth about rumors. But, like, we feel like we could date ourselves pretty fast if a signing were to come down the pipe. So we're not going to dive into a ton of stuff unless there's some real rumors that we want to get into. Plus, we did it a little bit on Wednesday's episode anyways. So we're not going to do a ton on this episode. We're going to talk on stuff that's actually going down, but there was something else you wanted to talk about. I forgot. Yep. Now Quads.
No worries. So the Vancouver Canucks have given Louis Erickson's agent JP Barry, the same man who represented the Sedin twins, has given him permission to talk to other NHL teams to find Louis a new home. Now the catch here is that the Canucks have told Barry and Erickson's camp that they will not be retaining salary on this trade. The issue for them is that no team wants Erickson unless the Canucks are retaining salary. And the number I saw thrown out there is a team won't take Erickson unless the cap hit becomes $3 million. That means the Canucks would be retaining 50% of the salary. I don't know about you, Chris, but if I'm the Canucks, I'm just doing that, because you're only going to free up a little bit over $1 million if you bury Erickson in the minors, which is what it looks like. So if they don't trade him, right? And they don't retain his salary. Like, they have to have some sort of plan, right? Because that would be your best option, to shed his salary, right? And now the question is, like, do they have to give up an asset to pull that off? Because now if it's, you only get $3 million in cap relief and you give up a second round pick just to get that, I don't think it's worth it. And I mean, Jim Benning's gone on the record and said that he doesn't want to move out draft picks to free up cap space. So, I mean, it doesn't look like that's something we're going to see happen, but I mean, you know, only 50%. I mean, I don't know, like, what's the cost for a team to take him? And I mean, there's a few teams that need to get to the cap floor, namely the Ottawa Senators, who just bought out Bobby Ryan on Friday morning. So, I mean, I don't know, like, it's a tough situation, because it looks like Erickson won't be moved unless the Canucks are willing to retain salary, which, to my knowledge, they are not willing to.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Ottawa Senators, I think it's $18 million to get to the floor right now for their cap hit. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Louis Erickson's $6 million would obviously help that, but there's a lot of teams around the league that are going to be vying for that $18 million to fill up for the Ottawa Senators. They would love to do them a favor and dump some of their bad contracts there. So exactly. I think the Ottawa Senators are about to get a haul of draft picks coming up pretty soon here, because they're going to fill up with a lot of guys who are making way too much money. So that's going to be an interesting to see that play out. I think I agree with you. If the Canucks were to retain 50% on Louis Erickson's contract, that's saving you $3 million. And, you know, if you're not giving up a pretty high pick, I think that you can package up Louis Erickson and let him go. For me, I've kind of come to the conclusion that the Canucks aren't going to be able to do this with Louis Erickson. We've heard a lot of stuff, like you mentioned, Jim Benning doesn't want to retain on that. I've almost just accepted that Louis Erickson's contract is just going to have to play out at $6 million on the Vancouver Canucks. He's going to be a guy who plays on the fourth line and maybe gets time on the second group if you want to get, you know, him killing penalties and making that defensive line for Bo Horvat. So I've just come to the conclusion that that's what I've accepted with Louis Erickson. So it's not like, you know, I would be surprised if they actually were able to trade him. And yeah, it's buyout day on Friday as we're recording this, so we haven't heard anything come down the pipe yet. But like we said, we will definitely be looking at some emergency podcast if anything does come up here very soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I thought we were going to hear something today. It doesn't look like we are, so when you're listening to this on Saturday or Sunday or whenever, there shouldn't be any news, because typically news doesn't happen on the weekends. But man, next week for sure, this is going to be the calm before the storm, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the name of this episode, actually, to be honest, is what we'll be calling it. And I guess we'll close out now, since we've run for a decent amount of time. We'll close out with a little prospects report. We touched on it on Wednesday's episode. If you haven't gone back and listened to that one, I highly recommend it. Obviously, we had Nils Höglander on the show. You want to listen to that. But I also heard some stuff about the AHL. I tweeted about that over the past couple days, that there is growing interest from Nils Höglander to play in the AHL, just from the fact that he would be one of the first players called up to come and compete for the Vancouver Canucks spot if there's an opening in the top nine group. Because if anybody goes down on the wingers, it seems like Nils Höglander would be the guy to go before Cole Lynn, before Jonah Gajdovic, you know, potentially even before a Justin Bailey or, you know, Zach MacEwen to play in the top nine. So I guess there's growing interest from the Höglander camp that might be a better option for him and a quicker path to the NHL instead of going back to the SHL and being forced to finish his season. Because it's not like if an injury happens to the Vancouver Canucks and Höglander's over in the SHL, you know, say in February, he can't just be like, oh, nice, there's an opening, now I can go over. But if he's playing in the AHL or staying in North America and practicing or being with the Black Aces or however the hell they're going to work out minor league teams next season with the Vancouver Canucks and the whole NHL, to be honest, like, then we'll have to see how that works with Höglander. I know that traveling through America to Canada as well is going to be a 14-day quarantine. So if there is an AHL season, I'm very curious to see what the Vancouver Canucks do about this. If they are going to explore potentially having an AHL team in Canada, that's something that we might see. We might even see AHL bubble hockey in Canada as well. Like, there's a lot of stuff on the table right now for the AHL, and they're just trying to get their players back to playing, because it is a developmental league, right? And, you know, a lot of NHL teams want these guys who are in the age group of 20 to 24, they want these guys playing hockey, you know, like, they don't want to have to loan them to different leagues around the world. They want them to be playing in their backyard and potentially be able to be called up. So it's going to be a very interesting little bit here for the AHL. I think we're not going to hear news for, you know, like, really, I have no idea when the news about the AHL is going to come down, but I've heard that there's a lot of different stuff on the table for that league. So I'm curious to see what happens there with Höglander for sure.
Yeah, likewise, man. I'm pretty interested to see, because it really will impact the Canucks in a big way.
Yeah, huge way. Cole Lynn, Jonah Gadjevich, these guys are, you know, even Olli Olevi if he doesn't make the Canucks, or Jack Rathbone if he weren't to make the Canucks. I mean, you wonder what these guys can do at that point if there's no AHL, right? Like, what do? Do you just have a Black Aces team that kind of follows you around? Like, there's a lot on the table, like I said, and we haven't heard a ton of news out of the AHL about that, but I'll keep checking in with the people who do have some information, see if we can get anything out of them soon. The final thing I wanted to talk about a little bit, big moment today in a KHL game is Vasily Podkolzin drops the gloves in his first fight of the season in the KHL. And I thought he held his own pretty good, fighting against a guy who was a KHL veteran, you know, a 23-year-old. He looked pretty good, dropped the gloves. I thought it was probably a draw, to be honest, in the fight, but I feel like Podkolzin landed a couple of good ones. And, you know, he didn't take any crap from the guy who was kind of holding him on the boards and pushing him around a little bit. And that's just nice to see out of Vasily Podkolzin.
Dude, I sometimes forget that Puck Colton's younger than me. Like, that's crazy for me to think about. Because last year was the first draft year where the players drafted started being younger than me. So that's, I was looking at his age today. I'm like, wow, he's born in 2001? That's insane. Like, crazy.
Yeah, that's how I feel every single day that I record with you. So, but no, at the same time, and you know what? Like, a lot of people, they come at me on Twitter, like, how many goals do you score? I know basketball fills all over me every single game. but like, you know, how many goals did he score? Why isn't he putting up points? And it's like, you know, Podkolzin's not going to be the guy who puts up points like Elias Pettersson did in his draft plus one season. You know, like, that's not the way that he plays the game. But the way that you see him impact a game, I've said this 100 times, it's going to be so impactful at the NHL level, just from the effort level that he's bringing. And honestly, like, I don't critique Podkolzin a lot because there's a lot of stuff that I like about his game. But over the past couple of games, now that he's playing 17 minutes and, you know, firing 3, 4, 5, 6 shots a game on net, he probably does need to work on his shot just a little bit. You know, like, you know, he does need to work on his shot if there is one thing that he needs to work on. But it feels like the rest of his game is NHL ready. You know, like, there's a lot of good in this kid's game. But over the past couple of games, I specifically noticed it. His shot just happens to go right into the goaltender's glove. He's got to get it a couple inches higher or a couple inches lower, or potentially start going to the blocker side. Like, a lot of his shots, he's trying to go glove side, and it just seems to find the goaltender's glove a lot over the past couple of games. Specifically, like I said, these past couple with the COVID outbreak on the SKA, like, it's been flying through that team. 5 of their top 8 scoring forwards are not in the lineup. So Podkolzin's playing top 6 minutes now, and he's getting a lot more opportunities to score goals. And you're starting to see it. Like, if there's one thing that really needs to improve before he gets to the NHL level and can contribute, it's going to be that shot. So I think that's something that he's going to have to work on this season. And like you mentioned, he's younger than you. The kid's 19 years old. He's got another year in the World Junior Championships this year. So, like, there's a lot of time for this guy to improve and get to a higher level. I mean, he's playing against men in one of the top, I would say, top 3 leagues, you know, the AHL, the NHL, and the KHL, kind of stand above the other leagues to me. The SHL is great, but the competition's just not the same like it is at the KHL. The KHL, to me, is a much better league, and we're seeing Podkolzin, a 19-year-old kid, play in that league, contribute, be effective in every game. So if he can improve on that shot a little bit and start to, you know, just get it a couple inches in a different direction, because he's just finding the glove right now, I think we'll start to see a few more goals coming. But the playmaking looks great. You know, I'm excited to start to see some of these points tally up, because who knows how long these guys are going to miss out of the lineup due to them being, you know, having the coronavirus. Now it's a scary thought to see what's going on. And, you know, even today we see the crowds absolutely packed again at Skaz Arena, and it's a scary situation. But if you want to look at the positive sides, I guess, like, I mean, Podkolzin is getting a lot of minutes, so hopefully he can stay safe and healthy, because I've heard some people have been DMing me wondering about the long-term effects if he were to contract the COVID-19 virus as well. And, you know, like, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, and I don't think that doctors have even done enough research on this to know as well. From what I've heard, there's not really any, like, you can't really do a long-term study on COVID yet, right? So hopefully this kid can stay safe, man. That's the biggest thing I see right now at the KHL. Like, it's, I just, every time I see it, it just scares me a little bit. You know, like, they tweeted out about it, I think it was about 3 a.m this morning, and they were tweeting about it like, oh, we just sold out the arena. And I'm just thinking, like, man, like, I don't know. To me, it just seems crazy. But, like, apparently they have a vaccine over there in Russia, from what I've heard from people. And, you know, some people have come out and said, like, these are adults that are making their own decisions, so let them do that. And I said, okay, like, you know, it just, to me, from the outside looking in, it scares the living hell out of me, to be honest.
Sputnik 5, baby. Did you see, actually, I guess we don't want to talk too much about COVID, but the only two countries that have developed a vaccine that's in stage 4 and past stage 4 testing is Russia and China. So do with that what you will.
Huh. Maybe they're just ahead of the world, man. I have no idea. But, yeah. All right, well, I think we'll wrap it up there, man. We got a good conversation with Jonah Gadjevich. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that, got into some good stuff, and did another 15 minutes on Triampkin. So that's the way this episode has gone this week. That's the way that a lot of episodes tend to go. We'll continue to follow these prospects, and like we said, emergency convos will be coming very soon because we believe that next week's going to be a big week. I thought, it's Friday today we're recording. Yep. I thought today was going to be the day that we were going to get some news. Something in the air, and we both woke up and we were texting each other about it. We're like, it just feels like something's going to happen today, but we didn't get anything on Friday. Unless you see an emergency convo that came out yesterday, like maybe something's going to come down late Friday night, as it's 2:53 p.m. right now on Friday, and we got nothing yet. So see an emergency episode. Yeah.
I'd like to point out, Judd Brackett was let go on a Friday afternoon. Actually, I guess it was like morning/afternoon. Judd Brackett was let go. Trevor Linden was let go on a Friday. I believe. You'd have to check that one, but I'm pretty sure it was also a Friday. And then Brock Besser was signed on a Monday. So, what I'm saying now... Actually, I don't know who we get fired. Nobody's getting fired right now. Well, Ian Clark's been making news a lot. Maybe he'll be the next one to go.
Oh, man. Don't even go there.
I know, I'm just joking. But I'm saying by Monday at 6 p.m., Monday by 6 p.m., we're going to see the first contract signed. I'll say
all
that.
Right. All right. Well, we'll see you guys for an emergency episode on Monday then. So we'll wrap it up there. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this conversation. Like I said, I had an absolute blast with Jonah Gadjevich. Going to be working on the deep dive, going back and watch some AHL games this weekend. I've got a busy weekend, Quads. I'm going to be working my ass off for Canucks Army this weekend because it's going to be fun to put out some content. I feel like it's a good time right now, and you know, nothing's really happening. Like we said, I feel like this weekend's going to be, like you said, it's the calm before the storm. I feel like next week things are just going to ramp right up with the draft only 2 weeks away. Like everything's going to come down fast and furious pretty soon here, so we'll keep you guys covered. And like we mentioned, emergency episodes, if anything does drop, we'll just get together real quick and bang something out for you guys, whether it's 20 minutes or an hour depending on the situation, I guess. But we'll definitely have you guys covered there. It's going to be on this regular feed here, but we'll see when those episodes come out. Is there anything else you wanted to close out with, Quads?
Nikita Triamkin, I'm rooting for you.
Wow, some words I never thought I'd hear. So we'll wrap it up there. For David Quadrelli, my name is Chris Faber. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.